It's good to be with you again. I welcome you with all my heart. I notice we have a few new faces here today. The first thing I'm going to ask you is, do not believe a word I say. Why should you believe what I say? Who am I?
Good question.
Because you've been there.
Do not accept what I say literally. Open your heart. Have no opinions for or against. Do not come to any conclusions. Leave your concepts and preconceived ideas outside the door for a while. And just be. Be yourself. Yourself already knows who you are. You believe that you are the body and mind. But yourself knows you're not. Yourself knows that you are ultimate happiness, pure awareness, nirvana, absolute reality. Yourself already knows this. Be yourself. Just be. Do not listen to your mind. Your mind will tell you all sorts of things. It makes no difference if they're true or not. Your mind is not your friend. Be yourself. Be happy. Just the way you are. Sammy is happy. Slap happy.
Other side too.
I don't know.
Mary would like to sing one of her beautiful songs that she writes for us.
This is dedicated to Robert. Thank you. Thank you, Robert.
Do you want to read the honey?
Yes, I do.
The corner.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting up from this world.
Yeah, you come all the way from the nickel.
No, a penny.
Oh, penny. Oh. It's a wishing well now.
Okay. I need the lead poisoning.
I have to go one way or another.
Again, greetings and salutations. It's good being with you again. Most of you see me about 3-4 hours a week. This is the reason we have transcripts. As most of you know, I do not give seminars or workshops or intensives. I do not travel any place giving any lectures. Do not advertise. Do not want masses of people coming in. I allow the transcripts for one reason. Because you only see me about 3-4 hours a week. And the transcripts are an extension of myself. This is why every once in a while I explain to you how to read those transcripts. Do not read them like you do an ordinary book. You go through the book and you finish and you're ready for the next book. And you go through that book and you're finished and you're ready for the next one. You forget all about the first one. This is not head knowledge. The proper way to read the transcripts is before going to sleep and getting up in the morning. Read through it once. Then go back to the beginning. And read each paragraph, pondering, cogitating, meditating, identifying with each paragraph, even though it takes you an hour or more to go into a paragraph, it doesn't matter. You have to become a living embodiment of what you're reading. You have to digest and assimilate those words. It helps. There are many of us, when we first get into spiritual life, we do so because we want to remove some problem from our mind or from our experience. That is the logic we use. We wish to become a happier person. We wish to remove a disease from our body. We wish to remove lack of limitation from our lives. We think we've got a problem that we cannot handle. And we wish to remove this. In the beginning stages, this is all fine and well. When you get into a thing as jnana, Advaita Vichara, self-inquiry, non-dualistic work. We begin to understand it makes no difference what we're going through physically. We stop to consider our physical needs. We no longer consider these needs. We forget about our bodies. We're not trying to change bad for good. We begin to feel that this world is an illusion. We've been mesmerized to believe that the world that we hear, touch, smell, feel, and talk about is not the real world. It's a world like a dream world. We make progress by pondering these things. After a while, after you've been in this teaching for quite a while, the feelings sort of die down. Many of you call me and tell me, Robert, nothing is happening. This is very funny. That's just the point. Nothing is supposed to happen. What do you want to happen? When nothing is happening, that's when you're really making progress. Many of you believe you have to make changes in your lifestyle. You have to move somewhere. Something has to happen in your life to show that you're making progress. You've got it in reverse. Everything in your life should become a nothing. Your desires should begin to become less and less. Your needs, your wants, your bodily comforts, these things should become extinguished from your life. In other words, you are transcending the world and your body and your mind. Only when you transcend these things do you begin to feel true happiness and true joy. All of the great sages, great saints, have told us the same thing. We're supposed to develop a state of no mind. We're not to think about our problems and our troubles, so to speak. For to think of these things simply increases them. Everything is karmic. Everything is preordained. And everything that's going on in your life is supposed to happen. Yet you are not the life that this is happening to. You are not that. All you have to do is to wake up. You're not supposed to learn new techniques. People run from teacher to teacher, read book after book, thinking they're going to find a special technique that will enlighten. There is no such technique. Can't you see the idea is to give up all techniques? To surrender everything? To become empty? And just wake up. But because most of you are so stuck in the world, in Maya, you just can't wake up when I tell you to wake up. You use certain techniques in order to awaken you. Yet no technique is really necessary. But you refuse to wake up. This is again why great sages from time immemorial have told us only a mature soul can practice jhana, real jhana, or real Advaita Vedanta, or Atma Vichara. Due to the fact that it's so simple. It's so simple that it becomes hard. So all you really have to do is wake up. That's it. The average person cannot comprehend this. They would like me to sit down, tell them stories and give them techniques and become initiated and get into all kinds of yoga practices, believing that'll do it. Yet most of you have tried all these things and you're still where you were before. You have to undo everything you've learned, not add to it. The mind is already filled with preconceived ideas, with all the garbage that your environment has fed you. You're filled up with everything. And now you run around trying to find new techniques, new methods, new ways to become enlightened. You're adding garbage to garbage. Really, you have to empty yourself. You have to turn yourself upside down and empty yourself out completely. Become totally empty. When you have a dream, all kinds of things are transpiring in that dream. Then you wake up and the dream is gone and you're back in this world. This world is just another dream. You have to wake up just like you do of an ordinary dream. You have to become free of this world by waking up. When you wake up from a dream, you no longer entertain the dream world, for you are awake to this world. When you wake up to this world, you become aware that you are the imperishable Atman, that you are absolute reality, all-pervading, omnipresent. You were never born, and you will never go anywhere. You are pure existence, absolute existence. That's all there is this self, and you are that. That's the real world. You are that world. You are not the world of suffering and pain and illusion. All this happens in an instant. It does not take time. When you awaken instantaneously, just like you do out of a dream. When you're dreaming, the self is in the heart, and the I thought is in the brain. The I thought and the brain are both dreaming. When you awaken from the dream, and this happens instantaneously, the I thought jumps into the heart and becomes the self. And the self is all-pervading consciousness. This happens between awakening from the dream and actually opening your eyes. When you open the eyes, the I thought goes back into the brain, making you become cognizant to the world. When you awaken from this world, the I thought will leave the brain and disappear into the heart center. You therefore become the self. It happens instantaneously. It happens all of a sudden. You become totally free. Totally happy. Somebody's totally free right now.
Yay.
To become a monk, a Zen Buddhist monk. You heard about this Zendo in Japan and flew out there. He had an interview with the Roshi, and the Roshi explained all the rules and regulations to him and said, by the way, before you go to your quarters, we take a vow of silence here. We only speak 3 words every 10 years. So the monk said, okay. He went to his quarters. 10 years passed. He had another interview with the Roshi. The Roshi said, do you have anything to say? And the monk said, the food stinks. And went back to his quarters. 10 more years passed. He had another interview with the Roshi. The Roshi said, do you have anything to say? The bed's hard. Went back to his quarters. 10 more years passed. He went to see the Roshi again. The Roshi said, "You have anything to say?" The monk said, "I quit." So the Roshi said, "I don't blame you. You've been bitching ever since you got here."
Yeah.
Things are never as bad as they seem. Look at yourself and see how you react to this situation. What do you feel? What do you think? These are the thoughts that have to be dealt with. It doesn't mean that you don't care what's happening. You understand the truth about what's happening. The truth, what's happening, is there's only consciousness. That's it. Or if you prefer, you can say there's only God. There's nothing else. You're not separate from the source. You are the source. If you are the source and you understand who you are, you will know that all is well.
I'm the source, we're all the source, consciousness, reality. Why is it seen that the mind and the thoughts seem to take over? I know you know what I'm saying. Why they seem stronger than reality, yet reality is all pervading.
Because you are immersed in illusion. You are identifying with the body mind. That's the first problem. You identify with the I thought. The I thought tells you what you just asked, what you just said.
Why do they seem so strong? That's what I don't understand.
To whom do they appear strong? To you. When you have a dream, the dream appears to be very strong also. Yet when you wake up from the dream, you realize the dream was nonsense. And so it is, the world appears to be very strong to some people because they feel it. But you're asked to go beyond your feelings, to go beyond what is appearing to happen, to go beyond your thoughts, to go beyond the body. You are asked to identify with consciousness, with reality, with the substratum of all existence. Not with the appearance. The appearance will always be. Do not deal with the appearance. Do not deal with anything. Become the witness to the appearance. Watch your mind playing all those games. Observe what's going on within yourself. I'm sure you're able to do that for a few moments anyway. Then you can tell yourself and ask yourself, Who is the observer? Who is it who observes the feelings and the mind and the thoughts? That's when you're really getting into it. And of course the answer is I am. I am the observer. Who am I? When you get that far, there will be quietness, there will be stillness. There will not be an answer. When you pose the question to yourself, who am I? Who is the observer? There is no answer. The answer is infinity. Beyond concepts. Beyond knowledge. Beyond the body-mind phenomena. Something that cannot be seen, cannot be known by the mind. So whenever you ask a question, Nate, you're always coming from your mind, from the ego. But you're told to go beyond it. Allow the appearance to do what it wants. Don't fight the appearance. Just become still. Ask, who am I? And become still. Everything will take care of itself. See, Nate, you always believe that you are the doer. And unless you're doing something, nothing will happen. This is the way we've been brought up. Our school, our parents, the environment told us, unless you do something, you will get nowhere. And that's just where we want to get. Nowhere. We have believed all these years we have to get somewhere. But we want to get nowhere. When you get nowhere, you will be free. So every time you ask the question, Nate, you are doing it from the point of doership. I, Nate, am alive. I am the doer. I know. I feel. I experience. Always I. There's the solution. Get rid of I. If I am the doer, if I am the person who feels this way, it makes sense. If the I is dissolved, there will be no one left to feel this way. And you will be in a new state of consciousness. Doesn't that make sense? So whenever you ask a question, realize it is I, Nate, asking the question. I want to know. Because I am experiencing pain, misery, and so forth. Therefore, as I tell you all of the time, catch the eye. Abide in the eye. Follow the eye thought back to its source. When the eye thought goes back to its source, which is on the right side of the chest, the spiritual heart, you then become Nate the Enchanted One. You become a typically new person. You're no longer your old self. You become pure intelligence, which is altogether different from the Nate that's sitting here now. Again, you can look at it this way. You're having a dream, and in that dream you're a pauper. You have no food, no money, no job. You go from house to house begging, begging. No one will give you anything. You're becoming emaciated. You're wasting away. And to top it all, you're dying of cancer. Now you're really wasting away. Then you see me walking along the path and you say, Robert, do something for me. Help me. Look what's happening to me. And I tell you, Nate, I have a great compassion for you. But you're dreaming. This is all a dream. And you look at me and you say, how can you say that, Robert? Look at me. Look at my state. I haven't had any food in 20 days. I've got cancer tumors all over my body. Then it appears as if you die and you wake up. And you find yourself in bed. You laugh at yourself. You're still alive. You smell the roses. You enjoy the trees, the sky. You never died. And so it is with life. We believe this world is the reality. We believe that everything that is to have and give and experience is in this world. We've learned somewhere, if we're good, we go to heaven when we die. But nobody has ever proven this. It makes no difference where you go when you die. What matters is what you're doing with your life now. For what you believe about your life now determines what happens to you when you die. If you awaken, there will be no death. If you stay deluded, and you keep believing you are the body mind, well, there are all kinds of stories that go after that. You have to come back again and again in different bodies and go through the experiences of karma until you awaken. This is why I said, as I did before, that this teaching is not for everyone. Most people can just not comprehend what this is all about. They say, I'm alive, I'm in the world, I can practice pranayama, breathing exercises, I can practice yoga exercises, I can learn to meditate to find peace of mind, and that's as far as you want to go. But I'm saying to you, you've got to get rid of everything. You have to transcend your body, the world, and your mind. It's up to you. I'm not here to try to convince you of anything. I'm not here to tell you what's right and what's wrong. I am simply here to experience the self. And if you can see yourself as absolute reality, you will become the happiest being that ever lived. we hear words like bliss, divine joy. Ultimate happiness. Yet I say to you, you cannot experience these things as a body. It's impossible. The body just cannot experience any of these things. As long as you are the I, by being the I mean you say, I am Joseph, I am Henry, I am Robert, I am Mary, I am Joan. That I is a lie. You are not that. Were you Joseph or Mary when you were born? Who were you when you were born? You didn't have a name. You just appeared to be born. A name was given to you. And now you identify with your name. Just like a dog identifies with its name. You call the dog by its name, it'll answer. We're the same as animals when we are the body. We aren't any different from an animal. We're only different in one way. An animal is conscious, and we are self-conscious. Because we are self-conscious, that should give you a clue and make you understand that you are the self. The self is not the body or the mind or the world or the universe. The self is pure beingness. The self is. The self is total silence. There are no words to describe the self. Yet you are that. You can only find the self when you become quiet. This is why the procedures that you learn, such as Atmavichara, self-inquiry, is to bring you deeply into the silence, to get you to a place where there is total quietness, total peace. Once you are in that place, the self reveals itself as you. It's like the sun. The sun is hidden by clouds, and no one can see the sun. Sometimes a glimpse of the sun comes out, but then the clouds dissipate. And only when the clouds dissipate can you see the inside entire sun. You believe in your body, just like the clouds. Your mind, like the clouds. You believe the body and mind is real. All of your experiences that you go through, you believe are real. That's like the clouds. But then one day, by inquiring, to whom do these experiences come? to me? Who am I? One day something happens and the clouds begin to break away. Your body, your mind begins to disintegrate, break up, and your true self comes shining through with all its joy and bliss. And you are free. Do not look at time. Do not think to yourself, I have been practicing for a whole week now and nothing has happened. Or a whole month or a whole year. Or even a whole lifetime. It makes no difference. Just remember, whatever you believe and whatever you do, you want to be led to the silence, to that quiet place, where there is total silence, total peace. And when you get to that place, you will be forever free. If you feel like asking a question at this time, feel free to do so. You can ask two questions.
A question. Sometimes I self-inquiry is difficult for me, so I hold on to the I thoughts. I spoke once, and Ramana spoke about this kind of I. I don't understand why I'm doing that, or how is it different than self-inquiry, or do they help each other, or just wanted some more clarity.
If you hold on to the I thought, you're holding on to the self. Your real self is the I am, the only I there is. So by holding on to the I thought, it will eventually lead you to the heart, and you will become the I am.
Isn't there a false I and a true I?
There appears to be. The false I is speaking of is the I thought. In the beginning, there is the I thought. That's the I you use every day. I am happy, I am sick. I am rich, I am poor. I need this, I need that. I am going through this, I am going through that. That is the I thought. It is an idea. It doesn't really exist. It has come out of your heart and it's gone to your brain. And so you identify with I am the body. I am the world. As you keep meditating on I, the I thought begins to leave the brain and go back into the heart.
So I'm holding on to the false I, and eventually that will just dissolve.
It will go back into the real self, into the real I. And you will become yourself. That's a good policy if you can do it. You see, the reason that some of us get a little disgusted with some of this is because it's too simple. Imagine all I've got to do is sit there and say, I. We think we want some substance, like mantras or japa or prayers. We think we have to do something profound. But I say to you, there's nothing profound you have to do. You have to become simple like a little child. Laugh at yourself. Do not take your life seriously. And simply abide in the I. You're abiding in the I by doing this. And you will become stronger and stronger, and your I will become weaker and weaker.
I have one other question. I'm reading some works on, death. And one is, dying, and one is releasing hold of the body, at least experiences that. Can one just continue with self-inquiry in that process, when subtle experiences start to arise?
When you're dying, you mean?
Yeah, I was wondering what Veda kind of...
Unless you've been practicing before, it will be most difficult to hold on to the eye when you're dying. For with the average person, when death starts arriving, there's total fear. And you become more engrossed in the eye than ever before. That is why upon death, according to the ancient scriptures, the eye leaves the body and grabs hold of another body. And then you go through the same experiences of I.
But what can one do when one is dying in 81 the first 3 days? I was looking at stuff could happen any time,
As I said, it's not what one can do when you're dying. You will not have any choice. Because the death experience will be so frightening to you. It will be so powerful in your mind, you will not be able to do anything. But if you've been practicing eliminating the eye all these years, perhaps you have not come home yet, awakened yet, but you will be an advanced devotee. And you will not hold on to the eye, you will simply smile as you leave your body. And you will realize that you are I Am, consciousness.
Because in this book I was reading, they said that a mandala appears and that the center is the white light. And if one just surrenders to that light, then, you can let go more.
In this teaching, you have to ask yourself, to whom does the white light come?
Yeah.
To whom does the mandala come? To the ego, to the eye.
Right.
The eye is experiencing the vision of the mandala.
Right.
So it does not free you. You cannot become free this way. The whole eye has to go. In other words, the object and the observer have to both become annihilated. You are the observer. The eye is the observer, it's observing the mandala. They both have to go. The only good that can do you, I think, is because you are experiencing the vision of the mandala, you can't become a Buddhist monk in your next incarnation. And you'll sit in front of the mandala for 30, 40 years contemplating the mandala. That's as much good as you'll get out of it.
Yeah. Well, in this teaching that the light is supposed to be our self, it's our who we really are. You know, and just, you know, they say that if you get distracted by other worlds, that's where you end up. But if you go straight, you have like a chance, a special opportunity to.
Again, you will not be able to do those things unless you've been practicing those things before. That's why in the Tibetan Book of the Dead, they explain you have to practice how to die for years before you die, to die correctly. Most people do not do this. But we go further in jnana. We go beyond the light. When you split the atom, there's a tremendous light. When you go deep within yourself, you will see fantastic light. It's like seeing visions. You're seeing the source of your existence, but you're not seeing the real source, which is nothing. You're seeing the source of your existence, the light. The question is, where does the light come from? Go beyond that. That is the only way you can become free. But lights, visions, mandalas, colors, those are all in the occult worlds. We're told to go beyond the occult, beyond the visions, beyond the light. To become totally liberated, totally free. One must destroy the eye who sees all these visions and all these lights. And you do that by inquiring, to whom has the eye come? Or who am I?
For me also, I use devotion, you know, I think that's what helps my self-inquiry is really, you know, remembering you or imagining your mana or somebody.
Devotion is excellent. Devotion is excellent because it stops you from thinking about yourself. It gets your mind off your body, off your mind, off your affairs. And you realize that Guru, God, and you are one. So you become devoted to the self, which is none other than you. And you become free that way too. So devotion is very good.
Robert, how important is service to the nun, to the class to which you're taught?
You mean service to the other?
Service to others as opposed to self inquiry alone.
Who is that who wants to give service? You have to ask yourself, why do I want to help others? Is it to expand my ego? Is it so I can say I'm being of service? If you practice self-inquiry diligently, if you're supposed to be of service, you will be. You have nothing to do with it. Your body will do whatever it came to this earth to accomplish. So if you're supposed to be of service to the homeless, you will. But when you say, I am going to be of service, that's a mistake. For we become flattered by this. the ego becomes stronger, because after all, I am being of service. I have helped someone. I did it. And when someone pats you on the back and says, good work, you eat it up. So it's the ego that goes through these things. Remember, I'm not saying you should not be of service. I'm simply saying they're both wrong. Know yourself and then see who's of service.
Then the self really is doing everything that's occurring.
Yes.
And we're under the illusion that there's a separate me who is involved in it.
Exactly. Mm. The self is. And everything that takes place in this world is the self, not you. When you think you are yourself or your ego, that's when suffering begins. But if you leave yourself alone and inquire where the I came from, then the self will take care of all your needs and the needs of others through you. A good example of this is Mother Teresa. I don't know if she's familiar with Yanamarga or not, but when you ask her and you tell her you did a wonderful job, she gives you a dirty look. She didn't do anything, she believes. Everything is being done through her. But she takes no responsibility and no credit for any of her work. That's being of service in the right way. In other words, she never really said that I am going to go to India and be of service to the untouchables. It happened through her. And her body is the vehicle that's taking care of everything. But she never believes she's of service. And she never believes she's not of service. She just is. How's Pam doing?
She's
not sure. Do we have any announcements on it?
Vendor next week at 1 o'clock, and it's called and said to tell everybody, please bring main dishes, not just potato chips. And just bring the main dishes, he said.
Does anything have to be in the main dish?
Dish of consciousness.
We're going to have some music. So be here at 1 o'clock next week. Anything else to say?
Thursday night, Wednesday, Guru Purnima is on Friday, so I think it occurs on Thursday night, please. And I'll celebrate that a little bit on Thursday night. This coming Thursday night.
Sure. We can always celebrate. And we have prasad.
Mm-hmm.